Flyover Footy, and you're listening to us. We're a St. Louis soccer podcast on the big 550 KTRS. Welcome, everyone. This is our third week broadcasting. I hope you've enjoyed the first 2 weeks. If you're new, I hope you enjoy this as well. We're going to do a deep dive into St. Louis City soccer, the previous game, the next game, all the fun stuff in between. And I got Matt Baker here to help me. Thank goodness. Matt, how are you doing tonight?
Doing great, Phil. Always happy to be here. Always happy to talk St. Louis City. A little nervous that you mentioned this is our third week and we just happen to be 3-0. I've been told this week that, and I hope it's joking, tongue in cheek, that we're some kind of a lucky charm on this. I don't like that kind of pressure. I'll tell you, I like talking about City. I like speculating. I like analyzing, but I could do without that pressure.
Yeah, I'm with you there. We accept no responsibility for wins and losses of the team. All we do is talk about it. So let that just be out there in the ether for everyone to hear. Matt, we're also going to be joined by Santiago Beltran whenever he gets here. He's a busy guy and he's going to join us. And we're extremely excited to have him to join us because he's been to the press conference today. He's been following the team training this week. So we'll get a lot of good stuff from him as usual.
And it's been an interesting week as far as player news and some things we found out today. So it'll be good to have his analysis on that piece.
Indeed it will. All right, cool. Well, let's dig into this Portland match. Another winner, right? Like you said, 3-0.
Yeah.
Started out not winning, right? And this is our third comeback win, and we're going to get deep into that. But I think, as usual, let's start with the starting 11. Matt, you want to lead us off with that?
Yeah, it was somewhat similar to what we saw against Austin. So we went back to a 4-2-3-1. We had John Nelson, Kyle Hebert, Tim Parker, and Jake Nerwinski on our back line. Making his first ever start and first ever homegrown start for St. Louis City was Miguel Perez in the midfield. Indiana Vasilev joined him. Our front saw Jared Stroud, Edward Leuven, Rasmus Alm, and then Klaus as our number nine. This marked the first match in which Edward Leuven was officially placed in that kind of number 10 role in that attacking midfield. And I think the big stories from the starting lineup were Djibulu Blom was out. That was his first week out for health and safety protocol reasons was the official reason. Miguel Perez, like I said, had his first homegrown start. And Indiana Vasilev got another start, this time with a mask on to start the match. And like I said, for a bit, I think it lasted what I saw 12 minutes total before it just seemingly disappeared. And per Lutz, it's a clear mask. And so it just kind of got lost there somehow. But yeah, it was a lot of reminiscent from the first two matches. And like we'll touch on here in a little bit, a lot of these guys are seeing significant minutes together. So we're seeing a true, so to speak, starting 11 kind of take shape here for St. Louis.
Yeah, and we're seeing options, right? And some guys that can plug and play to save legs, especially in the attack. It's been very fluid, and that's really cool that the system has guys, you know, and each guy can be different and the system still works, right? So that's really cool to see. I thought the weirdest thing about this was Ostruck on the bench, right? This is a guy we think is going to be a star this year or maybe next year if that's what it's going to take. Yeah, I was surprised at that.
And one thing it shows me is that Bradley Carnell is going to ride who is in form. Mm-hmm. So Jared Stroud in particular has played really well in these first few matches. He's been a part of a lot of really dangerous attacks. He had a goal going into this match. He scored a goal, like we'll touch on in a minute. But it's riding the hot hand that we're seeing. And so you keep Indiana Vasilev out there. You keep Jared Stroud out there. You keep Edward Leuven out there, Klaus, those kinds of guys. But you do see that propensity for some of the guys, whether they're in form, whether they just they're needing a breather or a break, to allow some of these next man up depth pieces like Joachini, like Alm, Vasilev, those types of players who they haven't started every match, but they're reliable in the attack. And you can move some pieces around. You can have a Leuven or a Vasilev start in your number 10. You can have Jared Stroud move from left to right. You can have Tomas Ostrak anywhere up front. So it gives that flexibility. And when we've seen subs in the second half for the attack regularly, you're seeing mixing and matching here. So I think it only makes sense that when you give a certain player like Ostrak a breather, you know, you expect him to come in the second half just like he's had done for him. And we saw that.
Yeah, absolutely. We did. We saw him come in with energy. One thing that I've noticed that when Leuven's playing the 10, it's when Miguel Perez is on the field. So that's, I wonder if there's like this connection as far as making sure, you know, a captain or an elder kind of situation where Leuven can kind of make sure Miggy's in the right place and he can provide some cover if that needs to happen. A lot of times they'll talk about Trivet is like, a lot of people will talk about the MMA midfield for the national team, how if necessary, maybe McKennie's the 10, but he's definitely getting back when it calls for it and someone else might push forward. So just something to watch. Maybe that's a possibility. The other thing is Indy Vasilev, when he's in, I've noticed he's able to ping the ball to the either side. And that's something that MLS pundits are picking up on, something that Leuven's extremely good at, right? And he does it regularly, is making those switches. Indy's good at them too. So we don't lose anything there.
And the interesting thing is there was a great article from The Analyst that kind of detailed Edward Leuven's involvement in our offense. We saw it a lot this game, especially by playing that number 10, where he's seeing the most build up to shots. He's seeing the most shots and chance creations in the attacking end for our entire team. He's tied with Klaus in overall attacking sequence involvements with 14 this year. Mm. And his ability to build up to a shot in that number 10 role is something I don't think we expected from him so much to begin the year, but the way that a Vasilev or a Miggy Perez or Blom when he's in allows that defensive midfield to really firm up, it gives Leuven the flexibility and freedom to push forward. And that's caused a lot of success for St. Louis so far.
Indeed it does. And I think maybe we'll probably kick into that a little bit more as we move on, or even after in the post show chat that we do. But let's move on to the highlights of the match. As we said earlier, St. Louis started this one from behind again. There was a Portland goal in the third minute by Zach McGraw. Matt, you want to lead us into this one?
Yeah, it was a corner kick. And just like in preseason and the first few weeks of the season, St. Louis has, if they've been vulnerable in any one area, it's been these set pieces, the corner kicks. And the way this set up, we had Klaus, Parker, Hebert, and Leuven on the goal line to defend the deep ball. And when the ball was crossed in, it didn't go right to the goal line where they were. It was crossed more to the middle of the box where Rasmus Alm and Jake Nowinski were. And they were marking players. McGraw just kind of jumped over everybody. He's a tall defensive center back for them. And he just jumped over him while Hebert and Leuven were kind of moving towards him as they saw the ball come out. The bodies seemed to go towards the ball and they didn't so much go towards McGraw. And he just kind of had the edge as he, you know, had that early. And it 3 minutes in, that was an early knock to the teeth.
Yeah, I think there were two Portland players right there and like four St. Louis players, and he just rose above everybody, like you said.
Yep.
And that's one thing. I think this will be a theme of today's show. But the fact that we signed yet another center back, we thought might have been strange with Lucas Bartlett. Now we're seeing that that's paying off and that it was a smart move. But the other side to that Bartlett situation is maybe they did see that defending set pieces was a problem and they wanted to bring in a big guy. By far the tallest guy. Yes, Tim Parker's like 6'2". Heber's not a big guy. Bell is not a tall guy. So anyway, that's something that perhaps they knew there was a weakness there. A little foreshadowing of the future in this game when we mentioned Lucas Bartlett there. But let's move to the next goal, if that's okay with you, Matt.
Well, honestly, in between the two goals, you saw what St. Louis, I think, has to get credit for is the first 35 minutes or so. They were not playing their style of offense. They were kind of being held in check. Mm-hmm. And Portland came into this match with a 5-3-2 look. So they were defensive heavy. They came into the match with their own set of injuries. And so as a team that usually pushes the ball up the field pretty well and has Evander as their playmaker, they didn't have that. Evander didn't start. He only played about 50 minutes. He was on a minutes limit because of his injury. And the way that Portland held St. Louis in check, we had 60% possession that first 35 minutes. We are the opposite team to that. We will typically go anywhere from a 37 to 45% possession just by the nature of moving the ball up the field quickly with those long passes and really creating that verticality. So the first half, between that goal by McGraw and what happens in stoppage of the first half, we started to trend in a positive way. So we started to have Indy Vasilev able to create and get a little bit more space to move the ball up the field. And that's exactly what led into that second goal.
Yeah. And
first goal for St. Louis.
I'm glad you talked about that first before the goal, because that is vital. You know, part of me thought about Evander not being the plan and that they just sat back because Evander was not expected to come in. And that's why they underperformed a little bit once he came in. But, you know, yes, they got that early goal. But Carnell said ahead of this game that he did not expect they did not expect Portland to keep the ball much, that this was going to be the game plan. So since he said that, like, I don't have to overthink it, really. This is the plan. They're going to sit back. They're going to let St. Louis have the ball, which with City 2, we saw until they adjusted to it, was a really good strategy. And I just love that they gave us the ball. And we did something with it, right? Which leads, this is our second goal that we've gotten through the run of play this season. Not just a weird turnover, not, you know, a set piece, not whatever. This was, you know, good, pretty soccer. We were given the ball and we did something with it.
It was beautiful soccer. I mean, it was magnified by the fact that we were so ineffective going before that goal. I was tweeting out numerous times just how I wanted to see Indiana Vasilev get some space, be able to clear the ball and move it to either side, because that's where we're most successful, is when we can create space in the midfield and get it to one of our wingers, our fullbacks, to move the ball up the field. And that's exactly what happened here. So Vasilev was able to create space in the defensive half and enough space to get Jake Nowinski involved on the right side. Nowinski pushed up past midfield, gave it to Rasmus Alm really deep, who got a cross in on the ground, and it was a cross to Klaus at first. And he gave it the slightest touch, almost as a misdirection. And it was Jared Stroud who was able to collect it there in the middle of the box and strike it home.
Yeah, I do think Klaus wanted to shoot it. I mean, let's be fair here. I'm sure he wanted that goal. But the fact that it landed at Stroud's feet and that he was making a late run into the box, perfect timing. It landed at his feet. He was there and he smashed it home. So, you know, he's having a great first three games, scoring plenty of goals for us. And that's not something I expected. But another little tidbit that I think we heard from someone this week, I read an article that there were a lot of people that wanted Jared Stroud, that wanted to get him from Austin on a trade this season, which is like really cool to hear that, you know, it's not a terrible surprise that Stroud is performing well.
No, and you need to give Stroud credit, because going into, he had success. He had some limited success with New York when he was there. He was great with assists. But when he was drafted by Austin in their expansion draft, he saw some time in their first season. He didn't really see much time last year. And when you look back at what happened, if you remember, he was the first player rumored that St. Louis was interested in in MLS. So early in last season, he was linked to St. Louis. And so you have to wonder, did that play a role in his time with Austin and getting minutes and how they wanted to use him in the season? And if it did, then it really says nothing to Stroud about what his performance was with Austin, because coming out this year, you could chalk Austin up to a revenge game of sorts, but the way he's been able to consistently play against Charlotte and against Portland, this guy's having as much of a resurgence as we've talked about John Nelson having after coming off of you know, the FC Dallas and Cincinnati years.
Completely agree. And more even, you know, it's I'm excited to see how he develops. And yeah, he was so good with Red Bull too. You know, when I was doing the USL stuff, Stroud was like one of the best Red Bull two players, if not the best for a little while, playmaking type, pressing, everything you're seeing here in St. Louis. So really cool to see him do that on the next level after, you know, Austin didn't work out for him. So this is cool.
Right.
We got a few more minutes. Anything you want to talk about, or can we go on to that goal?
Let's spend some time on Kyle Hebert. We have to. He's been the star of the week, and it came across from a Leuven free kick of all things. I mean, that's one of those things that are becoming commonplace for St. Louis, are Leuven free kicks. You know, he came at it from the midfield. The cross was curled. It kind of went behind Tim Parker, who was trying to go toward, he's taking his body towards goal. He's taking his head towards the midfield to the ball, drag a couple of Portland players with him. And Hebert was, if you saw the St. Louis 3-1-4 day video, you know exactly what I'm talking about. If you haven't, go search it out on St. Louis City's Twitter, because the guy quoted pi to the 80th digit. You could almost see him doing the geometry of where the ball was going, where it would bounce in the box and come up for him to be able to head that for his first goal. It was incredible to have him do that. And we've talked so much about Kyle last year with City 2, coming out of Missouri State, undrafted, getting picked up by City 2, playing all but 4 minutes, going into City not supposed to be a starter, and then picking up and filling in again, not missing a single minute so far this year for Joachim Nielsen. And this goal was just the exclamation point on everything.
It was. Matt, that was such a good tie-in there with doing all the math. And that was good stuff. But it's true. You know, you got to take the right angles when you're a good defender. And I also love that Hebert was mad that he only got 80 digits. He's like, man, that's only half.
He knew he could do more, too. Yeah,
that's really cool. I think we're all just ecstatic for Kyle. And yeah, what a great goal. And I just also want to say, too, that, you know, that was created, that free kick was created by Klaus, who got fouled, but, like, you know Portland's getting tired. They're sick of dealing with this big man up front running all over the place. They foul him instead of giving him space to run or pass, and Leuven and Hebert are able to make them pay for that. So, like, beautiful. You know, it's really cool to, I'm sure it's nice as a striker to know if you go down in and around the box that you got Leuven there to finish things off for you, or at least give you a good chance. There were a couple teams in the USL where it's like, don't foul anyone around the box. It'd be really cool if we became one of those teams to be careful of.
We're dangerous so far with Klaus making his runs, and we're even more dangerous with Leuven on the ball for those free kicks. So it's adding up to be that way.
Absolutely. For those joining us, we are Flyover Footy. We are a St. Louis podcast that talks about soccer. You're listening to us on the big 550 KTRS. Hope you're enjoying what you're hearing. We just previewed the Portland game that was the third victory for St. Louis. And in this middle section, we often go into stats and we talk about different news that's going on in the league. And I think this first one's a bit of a spicy one here that we're going to talk about news-wise. It's a little news about our South African player, Jubilo Blom. Matt, you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, we mentioned that in the Portland game, Blom was out for health and safety protocol. We didn't get a whole lot of detail going into Portland. This week, it starts to develop a little more. So later in this week, national teams started calling up players for some friendlies going on. And we were ecstatic to see that Jubilo Blom was called up to the South African national team. When he was announced on their 23-man roster, concurrently, there was an article that came out with an interview from the South African national team coach with some not too happy words for St. Louis. And there seems to be some kind of disconnect going on between Blom's status, the specificity of his injury and how long it's going to take, and his ability to go represent South Africa when they play, I believe, Liberia in a couple matches here in the next couple of weeks. And so that all is kind of going on. And so there's some drama kind of building on those ends. There's St. Louis City is not giving the most information publicly about the types of injury that Blom is going through or what health and safety protocols mean. They're not bound to. MLS teams are typically rather secretive as far as the public goes on the specifics of some of the injuries, unless you're Chicharito on Twitch, who will just go out and say you're out for 4 or 5 weeks or something like that. But this is par for the course. And so what it means for St. Louis going forward is, regardless of the South African national team call-up, which their camp is scheduled to start on Sunday, he could have been available for St. Louis, but in the same day that he was announced for the South African national team, Bradley Carnell confirmed that he would be out against the Earthquakes on Saturday. So that's a blow for St. Louis, no matter how you look at it.
Yeah, and Carnell said, you know, we're leaving him out. We want him healthy for this national team call up. So, you know, he's admitting that he's going and we're resting him to make sure he's healthy for it. But there is this question of, you know, is it COVID? People are claiming different things. All we can say as far as officially is that I have been able to talk to Manuel Vaith about it today. And he said, as of last weekend, you know, for the game in Portland, they did several tests, not one, several COVID tests, and all were negative. Now, we don't know what happened after that. And you guys, we all know what COVID's like. So and we all know what tests are like. So who knows what's going on? There are two different stories going on here, and it's one to follow, right? It's our first national team drama. It won't be the last, but, you know, I saw someone posting some tears in their eyes for this this beautiful moment we have here.
Yeah, we've truly arrived when we're talking about this kind of a drama. But, you know, you don't expect anything else other than St. Louis to do every single thing possible to identify the cause of why players are not feeling well, to get them up to speed and up to match fitness as quickly as possible. You know, there's no doubt that they're doing everything possible to identify and remedy and get blown back into fitness. And club teams typically work with national teams in these kind of scenarios. So knowing the importance of a national team call up, there are times when some clubs will kind of prevent a player from going, but I really would doubt that if all things are equal, that Blom would be prevented from being released for national team duty.
Completely agree. I mean, it's good for us to have him go, you know, it's good news. It's good, marketing, you know, to have your player be important to another country.
Absolutely.
So yeah, we'd love to see him go. I'm sure the staff will all work that out, and I'm not too worried. One quick one. Other players came into question for international call-ups.
Yeah, apparently Santiago was reporting that there were some conversations and some discussions about other players being contacted for national team duty. So, you know, I've got a, you know, we know some history of youth national team call-ups from some of our players from larger national team call-ups. So I have kind of a list that I put together of who this might involve, you know, if we're trying to speculate who might have received or being contacted about national team call-ups. From the U.S. national team, you know, this was not an MLS heavy roster that the U.S. put together, but I can imagine that when there is an MLS heavy roster, Nico Giochini or Indiana Vasilev could be in those kinds of conversations. Mm-hmm. Both have had national team experience before. Giochini had some good success with the national team a couple of years ago. And Vasilev as well. I think both of them are getting into some good fitness and having results and producing on the field. So mm-hmm. both are candidates to me. The Czech Republic with Tomáš Ostrák is an obvious one. I think his experience in their youth national team and his trajectory kind of leads him to be one of the top nominees. Isak Jensen, not entirely healthy right now, and not seeing a whole lot of minutes for City at all. He hasn't featured yet. So that's a reach for Denmark. And then Joachim Nilsson, obviously, if he were healthy, mm-hmm. would be with Sweden. So I don't doubt that he's in contact with them, but until he recovers, he's completely out. And then my long shot is Edward Leuven. Mm-hmm. For Germany. So he featured in Germany with their Olympic team a few years ago. So, you know, no prospects that I've really seen overtly, but it wouldn't surprise me, especially with his run of form, if he's at least been contacted or thinking about it.
I wonder. Yeah. I wonder how deep Germany will reach because, you know, that's a stacked team. But, you know, he's one especially. I hope that even if he doesn't get called up with us, I hope we've, you know, resurged his career and he goes somewhere else and then forces a call up, you know, same with right. Ostrák, you know, I hope he forces a call up with St. Louis. And I think MLS teams are good enough to send a national team player to the Czech Republic. But again, if he gets sent off to Europe, then I think it's going to be automatic at that point. One more point, if you don't mind, Matt, that in April, there is going to be a national team, U.S. national team friendly against Mexico. And the reason you're seeing no MLS players, I think there's maybe one on this Nations League call-up, is because that friendly will be very MLS heavy. So, you know, who knows? If Nico gets a couple more goals before then, maybe he'll get a call-up. Who knows? I agree with you that Indy will deserve one at some point. So fingers crossed. I'd love to see our guys on the U.S. national team.
Yep. Agreed. And I think, you know, that kind of pivots to the other big news of the week, which on the injury front and the player fitness is Tim Parker. So that was kind of a recent one that came up. And this week we found out that Parker left practice early on Wednesday. He didn't practice at all on Thursday and has been listed as day to day, essentially questionable for the match against the Earthquakes. And, you know, we're airing on the Big 550 KTRS as the pregame. So as this airs, there will likely be a little more clarity. And in the middle of our episode, as this airs, the lineup should be released. So we'll see if Parker is able to crack that lineup. Carnell said they're giving him 48 hours to rest and recover. But he did mention that Josh Yarrow, Lucas Bartlett, and John Bell are all options to replace him if necessary.
Yeah, I mean, I was looking for an answer, you know, who's the next man up? But, you know, any one of those three, it sounds like he's not trying to tip his hand. Go ahead.
No, but at the same time, we talked about how they seem to be valuing form. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the other thing that we didn't touch on were substitutions against Portland. And if you're looking to any kind of a hint on how subs or next man up might shake out, John Nelson was subbed out for Lucas Bartlett. Mm-hmm. Not Josh Yarrow, not Selmer Pedro, not John Bell. Bartlett saw time at the end of that match. And if you're looking to replace Tim Parker, like you made the perfect point on, with the size needed, Bartlett would seem to fit the bill for next man up there as well.
Yeah, and a Bovisi, we're going to get into San Jose, but Bartlett might make sense as far as crosses being sent into the box. But I actually think that Bartlett, you know, when he came in, they went into a back five. And so, and that was cool to see him come in and just start saying back five, back five. But, you know, adding a tall guy to close out a game makes all the sense in the world. Yes. So I do think that could just be a tactical situational decision. But anyway, who knows? I mean, I think all three of those, I think we're not sure who it'll be, because I think they're all so neck and neck that who knows? It'll be a hard decision probably for Bradley as well.
Yep.
Let's move on to more news. Some statistical news, Matt.
Yeah.
Right?
As we turn and pivot towards looking at San Jose, I think let's take a quick look at where some of the St. Louis players are on the stat sheet going into San Jose. So Edward Leuven currently leads the league in assists with 3, and he has had some consistency throughout the first 3 matches. Roman Berkey, from a goalkeeper perspective, is 4th in the league in long passes with 26. And you can see his distribution both with his leg and with his arm. Some of those long passes with his arms and the pinpoint accuracy had a lot of comparisons to the Cardinals being thrown around there on social media, which was hilarious
to see.
Very
nice.
St. Louis leads the league in goals with 8, and we've scored all of our goals inside the 18-yard box so far. Mm-hmm. We have definitely threatened from outside the 18, but all 8 of our goals have come inside the 18. And we have 5 players who've played all 270 minutes so far. Berkey, one of them. Jake Nowinski, Tim Parker, Kyle Hebert, and Edward Leuven. Klaus and John Nelson have played all but 4 minutes each. So they were both subbed at the end of a couple of matches. Klaus against Austin and then Nelson against Portland. Klaus and Leuven both lead the team in shots and shots on target. Tackles and interceptions, which are huge for our defense and kind of the way that we're able to disrupt a lot of the other teams. Tackles, John Nelson has 8 tackles on the year, and he's tied for 2nd in the league.
Wow, nice.
Edward Leuven right behind him with 7. And then, because he's all over the field, right?
He's got attacking and defending stats. That's awesome.
He's making a case for a lot of notoriety here. That's say that. And then finally, interceptions. So the ability to disrupt those passing sequences. Tim Parker leads the team with 8, and he's tied for 6th in the league. Which, if he's out, kind of is a even bigger hole to fill than just his leadership presence.
Yeah, really good stuff there, Matt. I love it. You know, 2 stick out to me. Nowinski playing all those minutes. You know, that's just scary because he's a fullback. I just think of fullbacks as runners. And so that's something.
Especially in our style, right?
Yeah, exactly. But that is something that Manuel mentioned, that for depth, it might be something the city's looking to get more depth at the right back position when the summer window comes. But, you know, shots outside the box, you know, Akil Watts just got his first minute. So just give him some time, Matt, and he'll get there. He'll get in there and he'll get a shot from distance that goes in.
As we know from City 2, all he needs to be is on the field and he'll find a way to score that goal from outside the 18.
Yeah. And we'll get into that, I think, in the post game show. So let's move on though. You're listening to Flyover Footy. We are a St. Louis soccer podcast and we are broadcasting on the big 550 KTRS. Hope you're enjoying it so far. We're going to preview the San Jose Earthquakes now for you. This is our 4th game of the season. We're 3-0. Matt, can we make it 4-0? What do you think?
Well, we've got a lot of eyes on us, that's for sure. We're seeing a lot of pivots in expectations for City nationally, and we're seeing a lot more excitement locally as far as the on-the-field product goes. If you're a fan of power rankings, St. Louis has steadily climbed every single week to reach number 6, I believe, in the MLS power ranking so far.
Wow.
With the only team in the league to be 3-0, sitting alone atop the table. And if we win against San Jose, we will become the only expansion team to ever start 4-0. So that in and of itself, you know, we talked last week about a lot of the pressures being off, a lot of the first game jitters against Austin, a lot of the first home game stadium opening jitters against Charlotte are off. We're creating our own jitters now. So our club is, and I use that facetiously because our club is clearly showing their ability to handle any kind of pressure. But this kind of focus is so uncommon for an expansion side. Usually you're able to just kind of play and figure out your system and your style and your identity and go under the radar. People are just, you're viewed as, it's nice to have you here in the league. And we're just going to let you do your own thing off to the side while the experienced teams kind of fight for the top of the table. And we've disrupted that entire mindset. And so going into San Jose against the team that they are, I think we are able to control our own destiny, even if we're playing in one of the coldest matches that we will hopefully ever play at City Park.
Yeah, people are Tom Timmerman posted something about people calling it the Bayer Leverkusen, you know, effect.
It's Leverkusen cold. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it is. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Yeah, it won't be fun. And it's good to pull San Jose into that environment, right? Not to mention the fans.
I think I saw a stat. It was the Fan Van account on Twitter. I think they said that it's only been this cold in San Jose one time in the past like 15 years or something like that. And so I asked a cheeky question of, they didn't play soccer on that one day and win, did they? In fact, no, they did not. So this is St. Louis has some experience in this, and obviously we're able to train in this weather. It's been it's been cold here a lot of their training days. So our players are used to it a lot more than San Jose from the training field and from a match perspective. A lot of these guys did play against Leverkusen. They know what Leverkusen cold is. And so they're able to kind of work through that. That has to be viewed as an advantage for us, honestly. So the weather in and of itself, you know, both teams are used to grass fields, so that's no different. But our ability to train in this cold weather and see some regularity with it and know how to handle it from a body temperature perspective, to know when and how to push yourself and what you need to do to get ready and get up for that, that to me is yet another notch in our belt going into this.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about what the Quakes are like and what they've been doing this season. But if you want to just talk about the vibe going in, the Quakes are not the best team, you know, as far as what people expect. They were not expected to be a good team this year, and they weren't an incredible team last year. A lot of changeover. But, you know, what we've seen with Austin is they weren't what we expected either. So, Mac, do you want to talk about what we might be seeing from the Quakes?
Yeah, it's interesting for the Quakes too. They come into this match with a 2-1 record, having lost to Austin lost to Atlanta in their one away game, but they've beaten both Vancouver and Colorado both at home. Now, looking at the form of those three teams, Atlanta is near top of the table. They have 7 points. Vancouver and Colorado only have 1 point each this year. So looking at their record, to me, is a bit of a misnomer in how you can judge the Quakes' performance. They're A, not at home, and B, not playing top-tier talent in the league when they have those two wins. Now, wins are wins in MLS, so yeah. Where you stand at the table, that is what it is. But if you're looking at the quality of your opponent, 2-1, it doesn't tell the whole story to me. But more so than that, the Quakes have a new manager, Luchi Gonzalez. He's a former FC Dallas coach, and he spent the last couple of years with the U.S. men's national team as an assistant in their World Cup cycle. So he's new with the Quakes. He's kind of implementing his style of play. And what is that style of play is the most interesting thing to me, because so far this year, there's a table that I'm looking at that is a style comparison from the website The Analyst, in that article I referenced earlier, from Opta Analyst. And it lists in quadrants, kind of looking at the direct speed upfield that you play with, along with the passes per sequence. St. Louis City is top three in the direct passing up the field with the fewest number of passes per sequence. So we quickly move the ball up the field. That example of the Vasilev to Nowinski to Alm to Stroud pass earlier, those quick movements. On the far opposite end of that spectrum, the slow and intricate, as they call it, where you have a high number of passes per sequence, you have a low direct speed upfield, sits the San Jose Earthquakes. In the same kind of area as an Austin. So they're similar in the way that they play that, where they're going to possess the ball. They're going to play horizontally. They're going to try to build up through their short passes. And when you're looking at how that juxtaposes with St. Louis, polar opposites here. So it kind of is, if you play your game as well as you should, then your style may win out. And that's what I'll be most interested to watch, is can Lucci ball for San Jose really shine through, and are they able to beat St. Louis's high press with these short, quick passes all around the field?
Yeah, and you think about the one time we were gotten in City 2, it was that North Texas game. I mention it all the time, right? That was a North Texas team that was able to pass through our press. And one thing I will say in watching the Quakes play Colorado is Colorado early in the game was pressing decently hard, like harder than most teams, especially in the Western Conference that we've seen. And San Jose would back themselves into a freaking corner, you know what I mean? And they'd still pass a couple more passes. One time it hurt them. They weren't, you know, they got caught. And I think our press is a lot more rabid than Colorado's. So I do think we can get them in that regard. But San Jose was comfortable passing out. They were calm and collected. It wasn't super effective, but it wasn't bad. You know what I mean? So that is, right. We'll see. Like you said, these two styles are going to go up against each other. And whoever's better at it, I think, is going to win the day. But I wasn't extremely, you know, North Texas was super impressive in that game that I mentioned against City 2. I was not super impressed with San Jose, but it's hard to tell when they're playing a different team.
Yeah, in San Jose, they haven't had any exciting matches to me. And they have given a lot of shots and a lot of shots on goal. So that'll be interesting to follow. Their average shots per game are 14.3, which are actually higher than St. Louis. Though their shots on goal, St. Louis averages more. The possession numbers are going to be about what we expect. So San Jose is going to possess the ball upwards of 60%. St. Louis is probably going to be down around the 40s again. And I think it will be those shots to see if San Jose can actually move the ball around and through our midfielders, especially to create some chances for some of their better players. And they do have a handful of really high quality players. They have three designated players on their roster. They have some league leaders in certain categories. And I think if they can get those players involved, that's where they're really going to be able to shine and put their system into play better when their stars can do what they do. And in that match against Colorado, it was really Christian Espinoza that he almost had a worldly goal from, I don't know, had to have been like 30 yards out that
maybe
hit the crossbar.
40. Yeah.
Yeah. It was an insane shot. So they're dangerous from distance right there too. So you can't give them the kind of space that Colorado was. I wouldn't expect St. Louis to give them that kind of space, but I want to see St. Louis be successful in disrupting a lot of these short passes. If they're able to not necessarily cause the back passes that we've seen a couple times, but if they're just able to disrupt the midfield passing that goes on between a Rodriguez at center back or that Christian Espinoza, Jackson Ewell, especially Jackson Ewell to me. So if you're not familiar with San Jose, Jackson Ewell has some U.S. men's national team experience. He's their number 14 on the field. He leads the league with 210 passes attempted and 186 short passes. And he's third in the league with 114 passes in the opposition half. Yeah. So he's the one who is really connecting all their players. If we can disrupt and more or less neutralize Jackson Ewell, we're going to have a really good chance.
Yeah, everything you just said are several talking points that I had. You know, I echo your Espinoza seems like the best player on the field. I thought he was incredible, not just in that worldy moment. He was good all around. I guess he's third in their all-time assists leader for the club. So watch number 10 on the field as usual. Espinoza will be very good.
One of their designated players.
There you go, exactly. But Obosi is a quality player. He even dropped in and was able to dribble at people and send some good passes in. He's a dangerous player who knows how to finish. And Cade Cowell, the man with the long hair and the mustache, the really weird, even my three-year-old said, what is that mustache? Like my three-year-old noticed the crazy mustache. So it'll be easy to pick out on the field, just a speedy left winger. But he's been getting quality with the passes and just the gamesmanship he's able to pull out in a game. So these are definitely quality players that can really shine in quality moments if they get the right thing. And then once that first goal is scored, despite how we're able to come back every time, you never know how a team's going to be able to defend out the day.
Yeah, and when it comes to our attack going forward, and we like to get, like I mentioned, all of our goals, all eight of our goals have been inside the 18-yard box. You know, that just puts pressure on their center backs to see how they can put pressure on our attacking players and how well we can work the ball in and around the box to create those opportunities. But Rodriguez, their center back, number 26, I talked about how well Tim Parker was in interceptions. Rodriguez is second in the league with 10 interceptions. So he's a guy who's doing the Tim Parker job that we've seen for us for the Earthquakes. So if we can we can figure out a way around him or prevent him from disrupting our passing network, we're going to have that continued success inside the box.
Yeah, and they're kind of multiple too. You know, they don't press high necessarily, but they will pick their moments. You know, they don't sit back necessarily, but they do defend well. You know, some of those stats you just mentioned, Matt, I think that's part of why they're able to get going. And you know, people are worried about this team, but they're young. That's why they brought in Luchy Gonzalez. He's a Texas guy that started in their academy. And when he got promoted at Dallas from the academy, it was because they're a club that has lots of young players coming up.
Yep.
And so that's something that San Jose wants to focus on and become a better team in the future. But we're all on a salary cap. You know, they're spending about the same money as us, even if they're not viewed as one of the better teams in the league. So the talent's there. You still got to be careful, and we can't get cocky because we think they don't look especially spicy against Colorado, which we were talking about pregame. You know, it is easy to look at them and be like, well, they don't have an identity. They aren't like us. We know what we're doing. We're focused. We're winning every game. No one's getting too excited yet, right?
Yeah, and we're three games in. You're starting to get to the point where even if a team didn't start the season with an identity, they're starting to form one now. Mm-hmm. They had camp for a month or two. They've had a month of matches now, and you're seeing a player like Carlos Grueso, one of the other guys. He's another designated player for them. And Phil, you talked about the salary cap, and they're not overspending on players. Well, Grueso is there. He wears number 7 for him. He's a designated player. They got him from FC Augsburg for their club record $3 million signing. Mm. And so that's not too far beyond what we paid for an Edward Leuven to make him our designated player.
Right. Club profile.
Yes.
As well.
And he is their defensive midfielder. So he's that kind of guy who tries to link up their back line to their front line. So and Luchy Gonzalez has really called him out as integral to the success that they've had in connecting the play from their back to their front. And he's going to be a guy to watch out for, number 7, Grueso. Fun fact, that allocation order nonsense that MLS did away with, one of their archaic rules that St. Louis City could have taken advantage of, Grueso was the player picked by San Jose when they did away with that. He was the guy that we had those conversations on our podcast about. Is San Jose going to trade with St. Louis? And Grueso was the player they took the beginning of the year in that.
Okay. Well, that's a fun one. Good one, Matt. Anything else? We got about 2-3 minutes. Anything else you want to mention before we go?
Let's just get to some predictions. Yeah. So before the match, I think for me, starting 11, I think we're going to stick in the 4-2-3-1. I've got Nelson, Hebert, Bartlett and Nerwinski. I think we're going to do Bartlett. I think Edward Leuven and Andy Vasilev are going to be in that midfield in this match with Stroud, Ostrak, Alm, and Klaus. So a lot of familiar names for me.
Yeah.
What do you think?
No, I think I'm going to differ from you. I would like to see us go back to the 4-2-2-2 against them, because I do think we can. I mean, Nico is so good in the press, and I think we can get these guys, and if they try to possess the ball. So yeah, I'd love to see Joe Keeney out there with Klaus. I think I would like to see Ostrak and Stroud this time. Just more attacking. I want Alm in there when we want to defend. He's such a good away player. He's like what I view as like the perfect away winger. And then I guess we'd see Leuven. And who do we think would start next to him? Maybe Indy.
Indy or Perez?
Yeah, I think they'll start Indy.
Honestly, Leuven doesn't matter if he starts in the defensive midfield or not from a sheet perspective. Mm-hmm. He'll find his way up front. And I would love if Nico Giochini found his way in the starting lineup. I would be happy to be wrong about that in this case.
Yeah, totally. And then I agree with you. I think it'll be the same back line except Bartlett if Parker's not going to be in. I'm hoping Parker like makes a miraculous recovery. Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Bartlett will be it. I would have said Bell, except if he hasn't been fully back physically, that's all I think we'd be worried about, right?
Yeah, totally agree. And then score predictions real quick.
I'm going to agree. Ashley Tecker messaged us on YouTube, 2-0 City, first clean sheet. I want to see a clean sheet pretty badly.
Yeah, I'm seeing Ryan had the 3-2 STL. I think I'm going to go 3-0. I think the clean sheet comes through. I'm trying not to be too optimistic because I don't want to get my hopes up and have them dashed, but I just see a lot of positives going into this, even with the cold weather.
Yeah, well, and you've been right every time so far, haven't you?
Don't put that pressure on me. I already mentioned the three podcasts we've had on the radio, the 3-0 start. I can't deal with that too.
I'm deflecting. See, I'm putting all the pressure on you. This is perfect.
Good man.
All right. Well, that's our prediction. This is all the information we have to give you guys for game day. If you didn't know, so we have the details now. We are going to be airing. We start an hour and a half before the game every single week. So if it's on the West Coast, we'll be starting later. So always you can tune into us an hour and a half before the game. This week it's a home game, so you could be driving to the stadium right now and listening to us. You could be about to get out of your car and walk a couple blocks and give your ticket and go watch this game. So I hope you've enjoyed listening to us. If so, either way, really. And I hope you enjoy the game. I hope you feel prepared for game day. We are Flyover Footy, and we're broadcasting on the big 550 KTRS. Thank you all for listening. We'll be talking to you next week.
Have fun. Go City.
All right, we're back. It's Flyover Footy. This is the wind down. I think we've officially decided to call it that. We've finished our stream for the Big 550 KTRS. Now we just get to hang out and talk. Matt, you just popped another beer and I got to learn from you. I got to have another beer ready to go.
I always try to hold it for this time. I like the wind down. It's a little bit more casual, a little less pressure.
Yeah.
Just a little more chatty. And man, do we have some things to really chat about with this one.
Well, let's start with a question because I don't even have anything. I think we got plenty of time this time. Ryan Hickerson asks, how long do we estimate Indy to keep his mask on? It's a good question.
Well, he definitely starts it with the mask. I think he's going to placate the training staff for that one again. You know, and he did go, I wasn't joking when I said he went 12 minutes with the mask. There was, if you remember with Portland, that's when Evander came in. It was around the 8 or 9 minute mark. There was the injury, and it looked like a pretty bad leg injury. He had to be carted off the field.
Yeah.
I can't remember the player, but it was bad. And the camera panned to him, and they panned away from our team for a significant amount of time. And when Indy was shown on the screen next, he was without his mask. So sometime in that downtime, he tossed it, and it just never made its appearance again.
Indy cracks me up, man. I mean, it's not
those pictures this week, right? On the app, there's pictures of him in training, and him in that mask with the beard is menacing.
It's a lot, yeah.
It's hilarious. But no, I think he goes 10 to 15 minutes again. I basically think he'll look for the first opportunity to toss it because I predict him to start. And I really think it's one of those cheeky things of he knows he has to start with the mask, but they're not going to like force it back on him when he tosses it off.
I picture him just like if he gets too much time to think about it or worry about it, that's when he throws it off. Where like if he can run and run and run and play, he's good. But the second he has to think about it too much, it's over.
That's fair. And if it's like the one he was wearing last week that he said it obstructs his field of vision a little bit, I can totally understand not wanting to have that during a match. And assuming the pain threshold isn't too severe with that broken nose, you know, yeah. I don't blame him.
My goodness. Yeah. You know, when you start running, things get numb. You forget about, you know, problems.
Well, and the cold weather now, right? I mean, his face is going to be numb anyway.
Yeah, especially the nose. It's true. Cool. What else do you want to, is there anything you want to hit before? I want to talk about Firmino maybe later, unless you want to talk about that now.
I was going to say, do you want to circle back to Blome for a minute?
Yeah, let's do that.
So we talked about the basics of it all. Blome having been out last week from a health and safety protocol, which we knew about middle of last week. You know, we heard about that around this time last week on that Thursday or Friday. And assuming health and as you do with health and safety protocols, that it has to do with COVID. I don't think that's a leap in today's world that if you hear somebody's in health and safety protocol, it's the assumption, you know, whether or not they say it in any sport nowadays. So if that's the case or whatever it ends up being, those kinds of things tend to linger a little bit. You know, as anybody who's had COVID or known somebody who's had COVID, that thing lingers for a period of time where you're still testing positive. Maybe you're still having some symptoms. That appears to be the case, whatever it is, because he's still listed in health and safety. He's out for this weekend. But the really interesting thing is that article from Hugo Bruse, the manager for the South African national team, where he says some really interesting things about St. Louis City not providing a detailed explanation about what's going on with Blome. And I do want to caution that this is everything I'm about to read is from the article in SABC Sport, and it's from his side. So anything I say that is not necessarily indicative of what City's doing or City's perspective, but he does say, first of all, you know, we see how things are going in the next hours, but Djibouloo played the first two games in St. Louis, and the last game he didn't play. So they immediately contacted the club to see what was happening. And the club, and there's some translation issues here, but it says the club said, oh, it's not so hard. He's sick. Okay, he's sick, but they're like, what is he sick with? So they apparently contacted Blome, and Blome, according to the South African national team coach, said, yeah, I don't feel so good. I think I have COVID. Mm-hmm. And that's in the article. So the manager said, okay, but do a test and then we'll see if you have COVID. Test it. So today it's Thursday and we've been speaking since Tuesday already. Yesterday we got a mail from St. Louis at 5 p.m. that the coaching and medical staff were discussing the situation. So the article goes on to say now we're 20 hours later and we haven't had an answer until now. And this article came out today, by the way, Thursday that we're recording this. Am I nervous? No, I'm angry. This is not correct. You tell us, oh, this is the problem. He has COVID. Okay, we have to change. But when the situation is not clear, you start thinking about things that are maybe not there. And then he goes on to speculate that I saw in America, there's a league game next week, the 26th of March, they play. So then he starts to speculate of if he doesn't come with a correct reason, he will not play with them because then we'll go to FIFA. I'm very angry about that, really. There's a lot of chest puffing going on in this article, to say the least.
Yeah. I mean, it worries me a little bit to hear a national team coach say that he's angry. I mean, he's elevating things purposefully, and you don't see that. I don't think you see that a lot in international soccer, especially in coaches.
Yeah, and I mentioned earlier that it's not uncommon for a club to protect a player or kind of prevent them from being released if there's an injury concern or if it's really COVID or if it's really kind of like a sickness that they're concerned about, then it's not outside the realm of possibility that they wouldn't want him to go if it would mean endangering his health or sending him to travel when he has his immune system's been compromised, something like that. So, you know, you can see that perspective, but they're coming at it from the point where the South African national team coach, Bruce, kind of makes it sound like there's no reason for him not to be released. And if he's not released, they're going to file a complaint with FIFA.
Fair enough. It's
harsh to read that. I mean, that's a far, you know, going really, really far in one direction about this whole scenario.
Mm-hmm. Well, and let's just get the conspiracy theories out there, because I think people will be saying this anyway, is, you know, one conspiracy might be that St. Louis wants to keep him and they don't want to send him, so now he does have COVID, or suddenly he tests positive and they don't have to send him. I think maybe the South African coach is upset because he thinks maybe there's some funny business going on if the communication hasn't been as exact or as strong as he would like. And another conspiracy theory might even be that MLS doesn't want, maybe he has COVID, and MLS doesn't want another bubble situation. You know what I mean? Like, they're scared to death to let anyone know that there's COVID in the league, or perhaps even St. Louis doesn't want him out for multiple weeks just because the name COVID is on there and they force some kind of protocol on us. There's so much stuff out there. It could be, once you start thinking about COVID and international breaks, like a lot of funny business goes on all around in all of those things. So.
Yeah, and I can see that perspective of you know you're somewhat hesitant to really give the full extent on a lot of injuries and timelines and things like that. So if a player, whether or not they test positive for COVID, just health and safety protocols, it's a safe term to use. And like I said earlier, it's really not too far of a stretch to just assume that means COVID. And it's, you know, in the world we live in, we live with COVID now. It's endemic. It's not a pandemic anymore. It's just a part of society, and that's where we've just gotten in the past few years. 3 years later, this is where we are. And so I don't know if I really so much buy into the MLS's concern about going back into a bubble, but I do buy into the fact that they don't want to publicize it nearly as much. And so you still don't want to have COVID outbreaks occur. You don't want to have that be a headline to a league or their team. So maybe there's a component of, let's just call it health and safety. Let's work through it on the back channels. But the thing that gets me is the piece in the article where they go to Bruce apparently didn't get a direct answer one way or another. And yeah, maybe it's City or MLS not wanting to really tip their cap too much if it truly is that or if it's not. But then to go the quote of Bruce going to Blome and Blome apparently saying, yeah, I don't feel so good. I think I have COVID. That to me is bizarre where you'd have that, the way that these conversations are occurring and who's saying what and different stories, COVID or not, it's a bizarre circumstance to be in for City.
Yeah. And when in doubt, I just like to downplay it. You know, I like to assume the best in everybody. So,
Blum's
going to go. I assume there's no COVID. Like yes. I said, Manuel said the last time he heard that there were tests last weekend that it was negative multiple times. So
right.
I think he's going to go and just maybe the communication got messed up. That sounds very human to me personally.
Well, and so. I can't remember if we said it on the KTRS or on the pre-show, but you know, he mentions we're now 20 hours later and yeah, there's a time difference here going on. Yeah. So that could mean an overnight period. So there's some, you know, there are a lot of factors going on here about, you know, when somebody was able to reach somebody else and how translations were and making sure that whether or not it was Bradley Carnell speaking directly or whether it was a member of the staff or PR or something like that, who knows, you know, this is kind of like a bare bones article from a details perspective. It's hard to fit puzzle pieces together except for that one side of the story, which how often is one side of a story in this type of a situation ever entirely accurate? Mm-hmm. Almost never.
Yeah.
So there's no doubt that there's some components of truth here. There's a side that City has, but if City's known for one thing, it is carefully crafting the narrative and the story and what they put out there. And it's never too much. It's never, they never pull a Matt Baker and get too wordy about things. I'll tell you that.
What about Parker? What is Parker's injury? I don't think I remember that one.
We haven't seen what the actual Parker injury is.
Okay.
We just knew that he was pulled out of practice yesterday and kept out today on Thursday.
So that makes it sound like it's just a physical muscular.
Yeah. And the quote from Carnell is that from today on Thursday again, they're going to give him 48 hours to rest and recover. So it could be a muscle thing, but it could also be an illness, I suppose. Like I really don't want to speculate too far on that because there's no point in that. But saying that they're giving him 48 hours to rest and recover is all we have to go off of right now.
Fair enough. Let's talk about, you know, we didn't get to talk much about Lucas Bartlett. One thing I wanted to say very quickly was that when Bartlett came on, you know, like I said, he said back five, but Nelson had come off and I assumed Akil Watts was going to scoot over to left back. But he didn't, he stayed in the middle and it was, Celia Pompeu playing kind of a left wing back. He was able to go forward still, but Nowinski was kind of staying home a little more, which in a back five, we've seen exactly that sort of thing play out in City too. So I just thought that was fun and interesting.
And Celio from reports saw some time in a fullback wingback type of a role during the preseason. It's definitely not his primary position, but for, you know, as a sub, you're going to find yourself where you need to on the field and where the team needs you to be. So he is a well-versed on the left side, as he showed with City 2. That's where he started before the MLS players arrived. Mm-hmm. It's where he had a lot of his success in creating chances. If you remember last year, Celio was in near the top of MLS Next Pro in chances created, mostly from the left side. When Ostrak came, he ended up going over to the right quite a bit. And so in preseason and in this match, I think it showed that he has an ability to play in that wingback role for us because, like you said, we moved into a five-man back line at the end of that match, and that kind of almost bridges a gap, right? It plays a similar position, but that flexibility that Celio provides, and we've seen him come in at the end of a couple games now, really just speaks to him as well as guys like Akil Watts in your ability to play a fullback, defensive midfield position, and just give us a lot of that flexibility when you need to shift your formations at the end of a game.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And you know, just, you know, Celio posted his own highlights on Twitter today, which I found funny. He's not the first, you know, people do it all the time. But, you know, You look surprisingly comfortable and still effective, almost equally effective as when he played for City too, which I wasn't expecting.
Him along with Akil Watts and some of these other City 2 players, you know, Kyle Hebert is the obvious example, but even Josh Yarrow, when he's been on the field, have really shown that what we saw from their success with City 2 wasn't just being able to compete against third division pro players and development players. It was that they're top of their league in that league, able to make the transition to be role players and rotation players in MLS, and you know, more power to him for that. I think it's an awesome opportunity, and I'd love to see that be a continuous pipeline the City 2 is able to provide, not just giving homegrowns a spot to develop, giving MLS rostered players some time to play, but whatever types of player we end up pulling in from an undrafted position or from the USL or League One or something like that, that they haven't gotten their opportunity yet. You know, they can shine for a year, then they'll get offered a contract. That's a cool pathway to me.
And it's amazing. And Celio could be a diamond in the rough if he's able to kind of become this super sub option and be effective. Mm-hmm. Many of his passes very well could have been assists. Like one was shot, you know, above, you know, Alm shot it high. But if he was on target, I mean, the ball was there to be taken. The goal was there to be taken. And what was I going to say about that? It reminds me of Philadelphia Union, who had, when they got rid of Paxton Aaronson, they went and picked up, I think his name's Torres. I forgot where they got him, but the dude is just like a dribbly freak. He's the one that had that rondo in the midfield.
Oh yeah.
In that first week of MLS. So anyway, like Celio's that skill set. It just works in certain situations. So I'm excited to see how they use him this year.
Yeah, and I think, so in the chat, Carver asked, what does our backline look like if Parker's unavailable? Mm-hmm. And we talked about the assumption that it would just be a four-man backline and we'd plug and play one of Bartlett, Bell, or Yarrow. Do you think there's any chance that they go to a five-man back or a three-center-back look and try to get, you know, we're kind of struggling for depth right now with center-back, so I don't think that's as likely. But, you know, it was interesting that we used that to almost park the bus, so to speak, at the end of the Portland match. I do see it. I think I do see it more likely that either one of those players just is plug and play, though, in a four-man back line.
I agree. Yeah, I agree with you. But, you know, I think if we ever try a five-man back line, it'll be if, like, Leuven's out or something.
I can see a five-man back line when Nilsson comes back.
Yeah.
Right. So if you have Hebert, like right now, everybody's talking about what's going to happen with Hebert. He's playing out of his mind right now, and he's getting national coverage for his performances. He had a team of the week performance for MLS. So if you have him in form as he is now, when Nilsson comes back, besides the fact that in Enable City, like you said, you said in our group chat earlier that he doesn't have to be rushed back now. Hmm. It gives that kind of ease if Hebert's in form, but once Nilsson comes back, a Nilsson, Parker, Hebert, three-man back line, and then whether you keep Nilsson and Nerwinski or however those wing backs look, maybe you could plug some other attacking players in those roles. That's an interesting notion down the line, but it's an interesting notion.
Yeah, and I was thinking initially, you know, not having Blom to cut off the counter, I thought that was going to be more damning than it was, and like not having Blom, it wasn't as scary as I thought it was going to be, especially against Portland. But who I'm interested in is like Minnesota's style of play seemed to kind of have our number. It always was effective, even if we were able to win the game or draw, I think was the best we did against them. But so like I'm curious, like if Blom isn't able to play when we play Minnesota, which I think is coming up in 2 weeks.
Minnesota is an interesting, Minnesota United is very interesting because of Reynoso's absence right now. I don't think they haven't been able to replace him, first of all. And all indications are there's no timetable if he does return to the team. Very little information. But I think without a player like him, and with Minnesota United too, it was Azeel Jackson.
That's what
kind
I
of
mean.
Able
yeah.
to create. So
same,
those with the,
same
without
role.
Those types of players, yes, yeah. So without that type of a role on their first team, I don't see them causing as much trouble. But you're right, that style of an offense really prevented us from making a lot of forward progress, and it put us on our heels in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
If they're able.
Sorry, yeah. That's what I mean exactly. I'm cutting you off because that's exactly what I mean, is that like without Blom, we might not get caught on a counter, and it might not hurt to have three center backs just always back there. And sometimes that hurts you by always losing that extra man going forward. But, you know, having three guys back all the time, we don't have to worry about someone like Andy Vasilev tracking back. If we don't have Leuven, that might be something extremely worrisome. Miggy, we don't want to have to trust him to be the last man back in a certain situation. So I don't know. That's the only time I could see it. I think otherwise we don't see it is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, but at the same time, the way that this team had performed without Blom against Portland, and Portland was not in their they didn't really give it as much of an attack as we were expecting. So there wasn't as much pressure, I think, on.
Yeah.
So it kind of aligns with the conversation of the Earthquakes, though, because the Earthquakes are going to be similar in that they're not going to have that verticality to it. They're going to try to pass the ball around, break us down, work the ball over, bide their time. The way that Indy Vasilev and Miguel Perez performed against Portland was a little eye-opening to me because first of all, I was expecting that if you have that, you're going to put Indy up front and Leuven is going to be that number eight type
of
player.
That was such a shock, yeah.
And to have Indy succeed in that role has been fantastic to see because we knew coming into this season that he'd been given time doing that number six role in preseason. And out of necessity, because Blom wasn't here, he wasn't yet in form. Mm. And we're seeing that pay off in spades to me, prepping him for this position and allowing him to be comfortable when we need it. We weren't expecting to go without Blom so early, but now that we're here, all that work is paying off. And seeing him able to be that pivot against Portland was, I think that will serve us well. And one of the reasons I have Indy starting in our defensive midfield against the Earthquakes.
Yeah. And I said we don't want Miggy being that last guy tracking back, but actually I'd say that might be the best thing he did against Portland. So I think I'm wrong.
The more back, the deeper he stays, I think the better off we are because, he does have some attacking prowess on his own in when he's played for the Academy in City 2. So it's not like that isn't there and he's not a danger there, but he was acting more like an early 20s player than he was a 17-year-old, being able to take some of these players on, really press towards a player and close some gaps. I would like to see more of him in that role where he's kind of plugging the gap between our center backs or between our center backs and our fullbacks, kind of like Blom was, where he's a lot deeper. He's almost like that single pivot in some instances on the defensive side.
Yeah, Carnell last week just said that Miguel is like a 40-year-old man in the way that he is able to, you know, be reliable on the ball. He doesn't lose it. He's right.
No.
Here's another one from Ryan Hickerson who said, so he's like three, he hasn't gotten any of his predictions wrong yet. He's 3-0 as well. So he's predicting, he makes a great point, and I'm starting to regret my 2-0. His prediction is 3-2 because he's concerned about plugging someone like Bartlett and Hebert in the back. It's a really good point. It'd be weird if our clean sheet came with those two in the back, wouldn't it?
I was going to say, can we have different prediction scenarios? And so I'll wait to lock in my app score until I see if Parker's playing.
Exactly.
Yeah. But yeah, it's not, I mean, that's not a bad thought if Parker isn't able to go, the thought that we might allow a few more goals. The one thing I'll say, though, is we're most vulnerable on free kicks and corner kicks. And the height advantage that Bartlett gives us, if he's able to correctly space himself and mark the player that he needs to, for instance, like if it ends up being a Bobasi or Espinoza or, you know, one of those players, I think we'll have just as likely of a success with Bartlett in that role defending those set pieces as we do with Parker. I guess it's more the run of play if he's able to head some of those balls out of the box or be that. Because Parker with his interceptions, like that's not a fluke. Like the way he's able to position himself and cut off some of those passes in the box is remarkable.
The man is a genius about seeing the play ahead of time and stepping. I mean, to the point where I was scared multiple times that he stepped too soon.
Right? And the way he's been able to position his head in those spots, I think Parker in the park. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think if that's going to be our biggest thing that we miss by having whoever replaces him, but without Parker. So that in the run of play, able to position your center back to cut off those passes, that'll be the thing to watch.
Cool. Let's get a couple more topics in. Matt, you want to choose the next one?
Oh.
If not, we can talk about Firmino, because I'm going to just touch on that. I don't think we touched on it very long, if at all, last week.
I don't think we might have mentioned it last week, but we didn't go deep at all. So, and you talked to Manuel about it a little bit. So I'm interested to hear kind of if you want to let folks who might not have listened to that interview, how that went, kind of what your feelings are, because I have an anecdote I can share in a little bit for those who missed it on Twitter. Let's see what you say.
Well, just to review what Manuel said, that because I hadn't read all these details. So sorry if you've heard this from his episode, but he's on our discovery list and we are the first to put him on it, which is amazing, but that he seems to be more interested in Inter Milan, which who can blame him, right? So,
yeah.
But you know, the fact that he would fit seamlessly into our roster, and they said it on Extra Time, and I was thinking it before she said it. What's the new girl on Extra Time? Caden? No.
Caden Clark?
Yeah. I keep trying to mix them up. But anyway, she was saying, you know, a lot of people are like, well, what about Klaus? No, play them together. They're like perfect together. You know, I think they'd be a really cool team up top. But like Manuel said, that he's not really leaning our way, but it is absolutely possible in the same way that Ronaldo was possible at SKC. It was very close from what I heard. So if it doesn't work out at Milan, it seems like we might be a good option for him. And yes, to get it straight, Lutz wasn't just in Hoffenheim when Firmino was there. Lutz found him, I guess, in the Brazilian second division, I read in that article you posted, yeah. Matt. It was such a good article.
Yeah, the idea, and that's kind of where my anecdote was going to come in. And it's Lutz felt like he overpaid for Firmino when he pulled him out of the Brazilian second division, because nobody really had eyes on him. And it was like, what are you bringing this guy in with these expectations of, I think it was like $3.5 million signing. And the rumor was that Lutz found him after playing Football Manager and he was able to scout him using those kind of metrics. Lutz quickly shut down all of those rumors, by the way. It was something that I think the Sun reported back in 2016 and had been resurrected a few days ago. There was a very staunch denial of that. And it came because he was sitting down with like one of the developers of Football Manager, and there was like a misunderstanding from the person who was interviewing them. But it was in fact Lutz just able to scout Firmino and see that talent in the second division. So, you know, that speaks more to the examples of Lutz and his ability to just pull people from anywhere and what kind of scouting know-how he has.
Yeah. Shocking, first of all, that the Sun got that wrong and published it.
I know. Shocking. Yeah, what are the odds?
But yeah, I mean, it's got Celio vibes. We just talked about Celio. Like, finding someone in the Brazilian second division and bringing him to Germany, that's not much different than Virginia Commonwealth, isn't that where Celio came from?
Yeah.
That's this tiny college. I mean, they're good at soccer, but still, you know, it's pretty cool. And who knows, he could be our next Firmino.
Yep. And Caden Kyle is the host Extra Time. I had to look that up because I was like, Clark doesn't sound right. It's Caden Kyle.
There you go.
Extra Time and 360, I think, a studio host for MLS Season Pass. But yeah.
See you, Ryan. Thanks for joining us if you're in the chat. That's really cool. It's a lot more fun having you guys, especially in this wind down section. It's really good.
Yeah, it's definitely nice. I really enjoy that. And I think the Firmino thing too, kind of one of the other roster related items that this plays into is Max Schneider. Mm. Another City signing from City 2, who took up an international spot, and we don't know, they didn't announce the specificity around his playing for City 2, but they did confirm that he had been loaned down to City 2. And so whether it is the situation we talked about last week where every team is allowed a one season long loan to their affiliate, where we're not provided salary relief, but we're provided roster relief in the sense that it won't take up an international slot and we have a player that can replace him on the slot while he's loaned down. If Max Schneider is in fact that player who is loaned for the season to City 2, or while he remains loaned, we free up an international slot. So that's huge, because we had one, and this gives us a second one going into the summer transfer window. So Firmino or anybody else, as we know, Lutz has commented on it multiple times in public that he wants flexibility to remain. So we have two international roster slots at this moment in time, and we do have an open DP slot. We have for Firmino, that would come into play for Firmino. And some other things to consider, non-Firmino related, is that we do have young DP, U22 slots open. So all these different categories of players that MLS allows you to sign players for, and they don't hit your salary cap for their full salary. We have all these slots open. The third DP slot is huge. And teams are encouraged to sign younger DPs and rewarded for signing younger DPs in that third slot. But the penalty, more or less, is only $150,000 to the league if you sign a DP to your third slot who is over 23 years old. So it's negligible. And City has that flexibility in their salary cap, in their GAM and their TAM right now. There is a considerable amount of flexibility because of how we've constructed this roster. And all of that's going to help. So if you figure right now with Firmino in particular, he's making just under $10 million a year. And so he would be a big bank signing for City if you figure that's the dollar amount that we'd be signing him for. But if we can sign him on a free, I think that would make it a lot more tenable to bring him in.
Yeah, and so my question is, if we were to keep either Schneider or Bartlett on loan at City 2, one or the other, that's one slot freed up. Does that mean no matter whether he's a U22 initiative, young DP, full DP, does that mean we only get two? We have room for two of those? Or is it like
so with Schneider
players possibly because of extra slots?
So if you with Bartlett signed, if you assume Bartlett is signed as a replacement for Nilsson right now, so he's only taking Nilsson's slot because he's on the injured list, and Max Schneider is loaned down, so his roster slot is freed up. That gives us three open roster slots.
Okay. And then when Nilsson comes back, though?
When Nilsson comes back, then that decision will be what to do with Bartlett. If Schneider's already loaned down, then it can't be an official season-long loan. But we do, again, have if Nilsson comes back and Bartlett were to take up another roster slot, we still have two open roster slots, two international slots, and all those other designations that they could fill. So there's still a significant amount of flexibility. And that's assuming that everybody makes it through healthy and we don't send anybody out. So don't forget, we could sell players just as easily as we could bring them in, depending on their form and their how much of a commodity they are. So two open slots, two international slots, that's not bad to go into a summer transfer window with.
You know, Charlotte's beating us in one regard. They sold a player before their season started. So we haven't done that yet.
Was the guy from Australia, right?
I think so. Yes, it was. Yeah.
Yeah, they sold him to Middlesbrough or something. And he was a corner piece to their midfield, if I remember correctly. So,
well,
yeah, they made a lot of money, but
I think they're in a promotion slot right now. So that's pretty
cool. Yeah, Middlesbrough. Yeah, good for him.
Cool. Any last ideas you want to bring up? Maybe one more before we go, or are we good?
That's kind of all I had on my notes. You know, I think I struggle looking at all these different articles, and we talked about all these articles that are coming out about City and how it's so cool to see us talked about now positively on the national landscape. People are coming around to what we've been saying for months and months and months. All these benefits of bringing in the MLS players early, City 2, the way we've constructed our roster, the fan support. Tom Bogert's piece on MLSsoccer.com was basically like, he's been listening to Flyover Footy for months and he had all these things down. Now, obviously that's tongue in cheek, obviously, but he was spot on with all of his assessments on why City is having the success they are. And it's great to see all this national coverage and this notoriety. And we always talk about how at some point we're going to have this bad run of form of 3+ losses and how is the team going to react? How's the fan base going to react? You know, I don't yet feel like the other shoe is ready to drop. Like the way that this team is in form, the opponents that we have coming up, I yes, it is a very optimistic point of view to say, oh, we line up well against this team, so it automatically means we're going to win. That's not what I mean at all, because MLS is going to MLS, mm-hmm. and MLS After Dark exists for a reason. Crazy things happen in this league. You know, Kyle Hebert, I joked about his geometry, but that was a pretty crazy bounce that happened.
Yeah.
And we're going to give up some of these types of goals. And the more players that we have out for an injury, the more likely that is to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what the narrative will look like if and when we do lose. Not if we lose, but when we do lose. And what it's going to look like when we do lose. Because I can't see this team getting blown out, especially at home.
Mm-hmm.
I see it more of a nitty-gritty, where if we go down, we're going to continue pressing. We're going to try to stick to our style. We're going to try to make, like, to Jared Stroud's point in some articles he's had, like, he feels like he can spark the team with his play. And he has in certain moments, whether it's getting physical with a player. Berkey's done the same thing where he's getting physical with Charlotte and kind of sparking the fan base, sparking the players to do something when you're down a goal.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that St. Louis has the fight in him. You know, because we've seen it in all three games so far coming from behind. So I'm also interested on the outside of my thoughts on what the narrative is going to be, and how we would end up losing our first match when that eventually does happen.
Yeah, and I do think, to their credit, I think the MLS pundits are slow to change their minds. So, yes, it's been a slow three-week adoption of St. Louis, which isn't that slow, but it's a bit undeniable. The where we are is not an accident. I think one loss, they'll be slow to say, well, I told you so. You know, I think it'll be a while. If it's three in a row, I think then they'll start trashing us. And it'll happen, you know, if not this year, next year or the year after, you know, but just prepare for it and temper your emotions, everybody.
Yeah. And so before we go, I'll give two stats on San Jose, because I do not want to end the show on that note, talking about like what happens whenever we end up with a loss. So I'll say some stats about San Jose. And these are a couple fun facts on both sides of the aisle. So San Jose, the Earthquakes, are unbeaten against expansion teams since 2019. They're one of four teams in that time without a loss.
Mm.
The Quakes do, however, just have two wins in their first away match against an MLS expansion team. So they don't score, but they haven't lost in four matches. They're three wins, one draw. If you remember, Portland was kind of the same way, though. Portland didn't lose against expansion teams, hadn't lost against an expansion team since 2016. So that stat might not mean a whole lot, but it's one of those interesting ones.
It is.
The one thing, though, another stat that I think is more pertinent is because a lot of these San Jose Earthquake players are longer tenured on their team. You know, they have a new coach in Luchy Gonzalez, but they don't have a full slate of new players. They have a lot of players who have some history with this team. So since the beginning of last season, San Jose has just one win in 20 road matches in all competitions, tied with the Rapids for the fewest road wins in all comps by an MLS team in that time. So they're not a good road team, and their one loss this year has come on the road against an Atlanta side that sits 2 points less than St. Louis. All of that with the play styles, the form that our players are in, and our predictions already, I think, do tell a good tale for St. Louis going into this.
Absolutely. These are all tackle and fuel, right? This is, I think our players are licking their chops at the possession. You know, I'm excited to see how they do against that. And, you know, I don't think they're going to take for granted that it's going to be an easy out by any means. So
no.
I think we can put our trust in that. That's it, guys, though. Thanks for listening. This is Flyover Footy. Matt, thanks, man. It's been fun.
Thanks, Phil. Yeah, had a blast.
We'll chat with you guys next time. Bye, everybody.
See ya.